Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are reviewing the historical epic, epic drama maybe, from 2013, came out on Christmas Day in 2013. Great movie to take the whole family to, Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, wow, Christmas Day. I forgot it was Christmas Day. That was not when we saw it.
No,
but
we saw
Christmas
it.
Day. Can you imagine? This is what you go to see on Christmas Day.
That's wild. Yeah, we saw it. I feel like Christmas week.
Well, yeah, I think so. Yeah. I wonder if we even saw it. It could have been like my birthday or something.
It could have been. It could have been
later down the road. We went, so Jared and I, this is a special movie for us because the day that Jared and I met, we saw this movie together. And then also saw Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah, and you had seen Saving Mr. Banks. Yeah.
With our friend Will before. So all the movies had an element of chaos and disaster and sadness and depression.
but I was thinking about this and I thought that this is actually like a great movie for two friends who are meeting for the first time to see because it gives you like so much to talk about. Like
it
naturally
really
we had a bunch of conversation. Like if we had gone and seen Fast X or something, we would have been like, okay, that kind of sucked. And we wouldn't have really talked, you know, but I think that helped to like foster the friendship
It wasn't awkward. It wasn't like some people, you know, if they were like in love or they'd gone on a date or something and they had gone to this movie and then watched a lot of this movie, that could be real weird.
Yes.
Or if they met one night at a bar, went home together, and then saw this movie the next day together, that'd be weird. But that wasn't the situation. So that was good. But wow, we sure had a lot to talk about. And I remember being really mad at this movie when it was done. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, that movie was genius. And then I wanted to watch it again and again and again. But it had been a while since I'd rewatched it. And I watched it last night. And by the end, I was like, Jared, I felt like I'd done 8 lines of coke.
I know. It gets more intense as you get older. So,
which trigger warning, not like I don't think a lot of hardcore drug users would be listening to this podcast or children under the age of 12. But there is just so much sexual content, drug content. This movie is a mess. So trigger warning if you don't want to hear about those things.
Yes. But this was a great movie memory, I think, for both of us. This, going to see the movie Her, and we both went to two different theaters. That was fun.
I forgot. I can't believe you remember that was the movie. I remember we went to two different theaters, but I wouldn't have remembered it was the movie Her.
And then the other one I thought of was when we went and saw La La Land, but we didn't plan to go to the same show, but we just both went to the same show at the same theater.
That was my birthday. That was my golden birthday. I turned 28 on the 28th, and my brother refused to see La La Land. He went to go see something else released that day, and I was like, but it's our birthday. And he was like, I'm not seeing La La Land. And I was like, fine, I'll go with your wife. So I did, and we had a great time.
So,
but that's so funny. Still love you, Sean. But
all fun times at the movies.
So many fun times. So many fun times.
So we've got a lot of news to get to before we discuss Wolf of Wall Street and lots of relationship news. But first, we are starting with the death of Jimmy Buffett, passing away at the age of 76 after battling a Merkel cell cancer, which is a rare form of skin cancer.
Yes.
He was very clearly beloved, of course, had many positive, fun songs, had his Margaritaville restaurants, his concerts. I never went to one, but it seemed like they were always fun times and people were just chilling and good vibes. So seems like he really loved life and unfortunate that he passed away at 76.
Yeah, I really only very loosely knew about Jimmy Buffett. I know my mom likes his music and I feel like for her age and the kind of music it is, that totally makes sense. I wouldn't say it's my cup of tea, but I certainly don't hate it. But I didn't know much about it. It was very surface level. But I have read like the outpouring of comments and people that are just so sad that he's gone. It is very sad. And 76 to me is still rather young. So that was sad and skin cancer and stuff. And to hear that it was such a rare form of skin cancer, but it does seem he really lived life to the fullest. So I think that he had a wonderful life and a wonderful family, and I think he lived life exactly the way he wanted. And what more could we ask for?
Exactly. So also, we have some relationship news. Timothy Chalamet and Kylie Jenner have made it official. They were at a concert over the weekend, and a video popped up on TMZ of them all over each other, just hanging out and loving life. So,
Jared, I've thought about this nonstop for 2 days since I heard the news and saw the film. So this are two pieces. Our two pieces of relationship news today are like just gutting me. And in such a big way. Timothy Chalamet, so he and Kylie went to the Beyonce concert. It seems like every celebrity that lives in Los Angeles went to the Beyonce concert. Literally everyone. And but not only that, he kissed her. And that's fine. It didn't seem like the most passionate kiss. But then he grabbed her butt and he was smoking a cigarette. And I was like, Timmy, everything you're doing, it's ruining me. And I love you. Please stop. And also, this might sound funny. I talked to somebody at work about this. For anyone who's like me and you're obsessed with the sex lives of college girls and Pauline Chalamet, his sister on that show, I cannot for the life of me imagine Pauline having a conversation, like a sit-down hangout with the Kardashians, with any member of a Kardashian-Jenner clan. So that's weird to me. And I feel like, I don't want to say someone's above someone, but like it doesn't. I don't think that the Chalamets and the Kardashians or Jenners are on like an even playing field. I'm confused, but I'm more disturbed by the butt grabbing and the smoking. Either way, do I think this is permanent? No, no. But am I devastated today? Absolutely. Absolutely. I've thought about it multiple times over the last 48 hours. I've talked to a lot of people about it. I might need some therapy.
Well, and then Kylie Jenner also had children with Travis Scott. So that's still in the mix. So he's got to be in the mix somewhere, even if this does happen. So it's a really messy situation for Kylie Jenner. So
we don't like mess.
And apparently, according to this article from Entertainment Tonight, Travis Scott was at that concert. So
the mess.
Like you said, everybody you know in LA was there. Yeah.
I think we really should appreciate this because I think this is perfect for our Wolf of Wall Street episode.
Yeah, and how they figured out that this is funny. Entertainment Tonight figured this out from an Instagram video posted by Alicia Keys on Instagram.
Okay, sure.
So, everybody was at the Beyonce concert in LA. Everyone was there. It's a hot place to be.
I don't think they let non-celebrities in the concert
because I think
it was filled with 800,000 celebrities.
I think that's all that was there.
A mass Instagram post, and everyone was wearing silver.
Yeah, everybody got the memo in the group text that was the outfit choice. So, also, sad news, Joe Jonas and Sophie Turner are getting divorced. Sophie put a statement up on Instagram earlier today saying, "Statement from the two of us. After 4 wonderful years of marriage, we have mutually decided to amicably end our marriage. There are many speculative narratives as to why, but truly this is a united decision, and we sincerely hope that everyone can respect our wishes for privacy for us and for our children." I have two kids together.
I can respect your privacy. Divorce. I'm trying to think of a divorce in recent memory that is as upsetting as this one. And
this
I can't
is a,
think of it.
Upsetting one. I thought they were going to work out. They seemed great
for each
other.
I really thought they were forever goals. I was like, because the Jonas Brothers, you know, like they have this, not like religion will save everyone. It obviously has its pros and cons, but I just feel like they're so religious. They grew up with this like really tight-knit family. I felt like they kept a lot to themselves, which is always good when celebs can actually keep things private. 2 kids together, and one of their children, like the second one, is practically new. I don't understand what's happened. And then Sophie, like they just seem so well matched and in love, and they're both beautiful. Like you love to see 2 hot people in love. That sounds
but
so
not
shallow.
Timothy Chalamet and Kylie Jenner.
No, I don't like Kylie. I feel like if you are not pretty on the inside, there's something going on there. And I feel like also if you are fake, everything on the outside was bought and paid for and designed by like scientists and plastic surgeons. I feel like that's not natural either. So is she really pretty or is she like fake whatever pretty. Bratz doll she based herself on. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm really going for it today. I am just very triggered by the relationship news, and I am unwell. But back to the divorce, I'm just so sad for them. And there's been a lot of rumors. And Jared, I really tried not to buy into it. When they said Joe Jonas has retained a divorce lawyer, I was like, that could be for his friend. Like, he could be retaining counsel for, like, a friend of his that is like, bro, my wife cheated on me. I gotta go. And then 24 hours later, nope, it's for them. Here I'm devastated.
Is. Yeah, that's sad. So
it is sad. I don't know what happened.
All the pictures of him are still up on her Instagram, so she hasn't gone that far yet to delete them. So
I don't know if she will. I mean, I do think they're probably pretty committed to raising their kids. And it also makes me sad because I love this. I have loved the wives club of the Jonas brothers, like all their wives, because Priyanka and Sophie seem so close. And is it Danielle or Daniela?
Danielle, yeah.
Danielle, like they all seem to get along so well. It just makes me really, really sad.
So that's all of our news items for today. We don't have any corrections. Recommendations, not a lot. There's not a lot on right now. So I've just been watching old stuff pretty much. So instead of new things, I will say I have not watched this movie, but I've heard that this movie is good from a couple of other people. So take that with a grain of salt maybe. But the movie's called How to Blow Up a Pipeline. And it is on Hulu right now. I saw it the other day. It is like a thriller movie. But it's apparently supposed to be one of the better thrillers of the year. So if you're looking for a good thriller, I haven't watched it yet. I'll come back with my thoughts, but I've heard a lot about it, and now it's on streaming for free. So you can check it out.
Well, please tell me about it. And also this doesn't matter at this point, but if anyone's looking for Wolf of Wall Street, I couldn't for the life of me remember it if I said it was on Max or Prime, but it's on Prime.
Because I went to Max. Paramount Plus too.
Yes, so. It is. That confirmed. But I don't have Paramount Plus, but I looked forever on Max last night and I was like, where did the movie go? And then I realized, oh yeah, it's on Prime. Anyway, well, Jared, I finally renewed my Netflix. I said I was going to do it like 2 months ago, so I finally did it. So, you know, I had to get cracking on my Netflix shows. So I watched Love is Blind After the Altar, which I've heard from everyone I've talked to a resounding, this was boring. And I would agree. And I don't know if there are writers or anything for those shows because they're supposed to be quote unquote unscripted. But I did think that it was like kind of a boring 3-episode session. I'm glad I got to see those people and revisit. And I will say there's one couple that I still couldn't believe they got married. And I can't believe they're still together. I won't say who it is. I don't want to ruin it for anyone. But it was nice to revisit those cast members. And then I also watched in like rapid fire within maybe 24 to 36 hours. I watched the entire newest season of Too Hot to Handle. I couldn't stop myself. It's still hot garbage, but it's a bunch of hot people on a beach. I mean, what more could you want?
Yeah, it's like it's got some similarities to Love is Blind in that it's still kind of trashy at parts, but it's even more trashy because it's more all about just like hooking up. And like you said, it's like insanely hot people in their swimsuits all the episode long. So,
well, and I think the people on Love is Blind, they actually go there because they're like, I'm ready to get married. Yeah. I really care about this. So I think they have good intentions. Too Hot to Handle, no they don't. And then I also, there was one book I wanted to recommend. I alluded to this on our last episode, but I finished it. It was excellent, so I wanted to share. I read The Wishing Game by Meg, I think it is pronounced Schaefer. It's Schaffer. And this was the book that I had talked about that is, it has some, it's, I would definitely say adjacent to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? I always forget what the book is actually called.
I think it's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I think. Okay. I don't know. Let me look.
You know what? Let me know.
Okay.
Anyway, very, it's similar in the premise as far as like winning a contest to meet an icon. And I got this from Book of the Month. Where else would I have gotten this book? But it is all the rage Book of the Month to the members, of which I am one. you vote on things, and they have a whole section that's members most loved of the year. This is already one of their most loved, and it was a release like a month, maybe 2 months ago. So that already should say something. It's getting spectacular accolades, and it's less than 300 pages. It's just under 300 pages. So it's a quick read, and it was just really sweet. I liked it much better than the Chocolate Factory. Who is it? Which one is it?
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Thank you. I like it a lot better than Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but it was just weird that I had reread those Roald Dahl books, including that one, and then read this. And this isn't, it's not like there's a contest and it has chocolate and there's kids, but there's a contest to meet an author who's kind of been a recluse for a bunch of years and you kind of find out why, and it's to read his new book. But there's so many sweet elements to it. The person, the main character, she's really invested in fostering kids and wants to adopt a child that she's been fostering. Like there's just so much more to it. So again, that's called The Wishing Game by Meg Schaefer. And it's not my favorite book of the year, but it's definitely going to probably be in my top 20. Like I always try to do a like top 20 and separate them into categories. It was really good.
Actually just got it. I haven't started reading it yet, but I just got it from the library. So
you did?
Yeah. It's in
I think you're gonna like
it. My bedroom
it.
Right now. So.
And then I read another book this week, but it was horrible, so I won't recommend it to anybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about The Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay.
Released on December 25th of 2013. Rated R for graphic nudity, drug use, language, some violence, and strong sexual content. All
hard R,
are,
everyone.
Yeah, hard
the
R.
Hardest, the hardest of R's on this one.
Honestly, shocked it's not NC-17.
Me too. This, you know what? In the words of Stefan, this movie has everything. It's got full frontal nudity, drugs galore, swearing, drunk driving, smoking, everything.
Everything. It's
illegal,
got everything.
Activity, disrespect, yep. Lots of language, everything.
Yeah. And drugs. We are, you know.
And drugs.
Just one more time. Drugs. So, runtime is 3 hours or 2 hours and 59 minutes. That's going to be a topic of discussion when we get into our likes and dislikes a little bit. I think watching this multiple times, and we'll talk about it more in a little bit, I have found some areas I think they could have cut out a little bit to make it like 2.5 hours, maybe. IMDb is an 8.2 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 80%. Audience, 83%. And box office wise, made $116 million domestically and $406 million worldwide. It is based on the true story of Jordan Belfort, from his rise to a wealthy stockbroker living the high life to his fall involving crime, corruption, and the federal government.
Yes.
Cover all that in 3 hours.
This is a real person, too.
Yes, and he has seen this movie. So
yes.
He's commented on it for sure. So
yeah.
He's still alive, yeah. This is directed by Martin Scorsese. He is a very accomplished director known for Taxi Driver, Mean Streets, Goodfellas, Gangs of New York, The Aviator, and The Departed. He's been nominated for 14 Oscars. And in 2007, won a Best Director Oscar for The Departed. Next up, he will be directing Leonardo DiCaprio once again in the movie Killers of the Flower Moon. And he has 4 other projects he's working on, including Roosevelt and a TV series for Gangs of New York.
Also, I wanted to say Jordan Belfort, the real guy, apparently he's 5'7". Nothing wrong with it, but that is quite short for a male. And which I, you know, sometimes people make jokes about that, like Napoleon and stuff. Like people could have like a syndrome where they behave a certain way because they're compensating for something. But also the real Jordan Belfort, if you're wondering, at the very end of the movie, there's like a seminar going on and Leonardo DiCaprio is introduced to like sell a pen to someone and he's going to give basically like a TED talk. The guy that introduces him is the real Jordan Belfort.
Okay, cool. Did not know that. So mm-hmm. I have another little fun fact I'm going to share when we get
later
on. Oh,
okay.
So, yeah. Also, that Roosevelt movie is, in case you're wondering, it's about Theodore Roosevelt. Leo will be playing Theodore Roosevelt. So
Teddy was just as interesting as FDR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He really was. Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, it's been Leo and Scorsese together for a while now in terms of...
Yeah.
Being in those movies. I mean, Leo was in that Adam McKay movie, Don't Look Up, which was not great.
Oh,
but he's really kind of picky about his projects. So
also, I know you just read it, but like Scorsese's list of movies is insane. And it's funny because he is known as being this sweet, quiet, grandfatherly Italian man. And he makes like the craziest movies with the meanest, wackiest, drug-fueled lunatics. So yeah. Who knows?
He did make Hugo, though. Don't forget about old Hugo. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was for his kids, he said. So they could actually have a movie that, you know, they could watch.
That's kind of like, that's like a Tom Hanks move.
Yeah, it really is. So,
because, you know, I haven't mentioned Tom Hanks. I feel like I've been really going heavy on the Timothée Chalamet talk lately because he's ruining my life. But also Tom, I feel like I want everyone to know how much I still love Tom Hanks. But also Tom is someone you would never see in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Nope, you would not.
This isn't his kind of film.
What's Tom's next thing that he's going to be in?
I don't know.
He was in Asteroid City.
What's that guy up to?
I know.
I'm sure he's got like 9 upcoming projects, though.
Probably. I'm trying to see here that he's what he's acting in upcoming wise. So let's see here. So just one thing called Here.
Oh.
He is producing some upcoming stuff, which makes sense. But I don't know what Here is about. So. Just says it's in production right now. It says set in one single room, follows the many people who inhabit it over years and years from the past to the future. So he's going to be in it. Robin Wright, Paul Bettany. That's pretty much the cast. So, okay. Well, we'll see when that comes out, what that's like. So, yeah, we'll take a break here on the show. We'll come back, talk about the cast, our likes and dislikes for The Wolf of Wall Street. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about The Wolf of Wall Street. In the lead role, playing Jordan Belfort, is Leonardo DiCaprio.
Thank you, Jared. Leonardo DiCaprio, you might be wondering, why isn't she doing a crush alert? Leo's fine. I think he's good looking, but the older he gets, the less attracted I am. The more I hear about his dating history and also his incessant smoking. So definitely not a crush alert for me. He is best known for Inception, Titanic, The Departed, The Revenant, The Great Gatsby, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and The Aviator, among many other movies. He's been nominated for 6 acting Oscars, including one for Best Picture for The Wolf of Wall Street. And in 2016, he finally won a Best Actor Oscar for The Revenant, a rather infamous scene where he has to climb into an animal to survive. If you heard about that, that is The Revenant. And then he has 4 upcoming projects listed, including the previously mentioned Roosevelt that Scorsese's directing, Jim Jones, infamous dude that led the cult,
yeah.
He was from Indiana, which I'm not proud of. And also The Crowded Room.
Okay. Must be another. There was a movie that came out earlier this year called The Crowded Room, but this must be different. Yeah,
I think it's a show with Tom Holland.
Oh, okay.
I think it was a show. It could have been a movie, but Tom Holland.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe fact check it.
It looks like it did come out on Apple, but
okay, yeah.
Maybe Leo produced it. I don't know. So
I don't know.
Or maybe there's another thing coming out called The Crowded Room. So
who knows? I mean. Only time will tell. And right now, I feel like Hollywood is at a standstill.
Yes.
Next up, we have Jonah Hill. He plays Donnie Azoff. I also have problems with him and find him to be quite problematic. He is best known for 21 Jump Street, Moneyball, 22 Jump Street, and Don't Look Up, which to me is one of the worst movies I've ever sat through in my entire life. Just my opinion. He's been nominated for 2 Best Supporting Actor Oscars for this movie and Moneyball. Next up, he has a project called Outcome.
Also, that Leo project is a movie. It's been in development for quite a while. But apparently, they're still working on it. But there's an article from 2015 saying that he was working on it. So
and let us never forget, Devil in the White City is still supposed to be a thing as well
at some point. Yeah, that's supposed to come out at some point.
Yes. And then lastly, get that crush alert button ready, Jared. Let us not forget Margot Robbie. Thank you, Jared. She is playing Naomi LaPaglia in this movie. She is Leo's second wife in the film. We just talked about her in episode 198 when we covered Barbie, which is now the highest grossing movie for Warner Brothers. Is it of all time or this year? I can't remember. Definitely this year.
All time. And it's also it's probably now the highest grossing movie of the year. It was behind Super Mario Brothers, but I'm guessing it has passed that. So, yes.
And it's in the $1 billion club too. So, yep. Yes. Anyway, we love to see it. Way to go, Margot. So happy for you. She is an Australian actress and producer, best known for I, Tonya, The Suicide Squad, Birds of Prey, The Wolf of Wall Street, Amsterdam, Babylon, and About Time. We just covered About Time in our last episode. In 2020, she was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for Bombshell. And in 2018, she was nominated for a Best Actress for I, Tonya. Next up, she will star in an untitled Ocean's 11 film.
Okay.
And then this movie has quite a cast alongside Leo. A lot of these people, though, have really pretty short parts. They are important, relevant parts, but the top three we talked about are the three you basically follow throughout the entire film. But the supporting cast includes Matthew McConaughey, Kyle Chandler, Rob Reiner, Jon Bernthal, Jon Favreau, Kristen Milioti, and more. I think this would have been the first thing I saw Jon Bernthal in.
Okay, yeah, it might have been the same for me too. And yeah. I would say out of those that you mentioned, I think Kyle Chandler or Jon Bernthal probably has the biggest part out of those supporting cast members. McConaughey is really just popping in for a scene and then he's never seen again. So
yes. And I have something to say in I have something to say about McConaughey. He comes up again.
So, also, Barbie is the highest grossing movie of the year worldwide. So
love it. Yes, girl.
Has beaten Super Mario Brothers now. It's made $23 million more than Super Mario Brothers. So, and that will continue to climb. So, good payday for Margot. Let's talk about our likes for Wolf of Wall Street. Obviously, we're mentioning the cast. The performances in this movie are fantastic, really, all around. Everybody's batting 1,000. You've got, obviously, Leo in the star role. Crushing it. Jonah Hill is very good. Margot Robbie, this is her like really huge thing that we've seen her in, and she holds her own in this movie. So everybody else we mentioned, Rob Reiner's good too, but some of these people in real life are a little bit of scumballs, especially Jonah Hill. But then
Jonah
Leo,
Hill's the worst.
Yeah, Leo dating his 20-year-olds too is not the best thing in the world.
And what freaks me out is like Now, knowing what I know now in 2023, I don't know how much Jonah or Leo is really acting in a lot of this movie. I mean, I think Leo's performance is spot on. It's darn near perfect, truly. I don't really have a false note. I don't have a note for Leo in this film, acting wise. But I do feel like a lot of what's happening in this movie is really like indicative of Leo in real life with his like yacht life in Europe all the time with a hot 20-year-old French girl smoking and probably doing drugs and like just eating whatever he wants and just living the life. So I don't know. And Jonah just seems real sleazy and like a misogynist. So
yeah, Leo on X now instead of Twitter does not tweet very much. One of the boring Twitter accounts to follow. His pinned tweet is still from 2016 when he won his Oscar. So he hasn't been on there in a while. So
wow.
He said, thank you to the Academy and the incredible cast and crew of The Revenant, February 29, 2016. So
thanks, Leo.
Thanks,
Leo. We really enjoyed hearing from you.
Yeah. I think I would agree with you that DiCaprio probably should have won his Oscar for this movie instead of The Revenant.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't say that. I'm so sorry. Thank you for reminding me, Jared. I personally was really upset when he didn't win this. And then last night, out of curiosity, I looked up who did win that year. And it was Matthew McConaughey, which makes sense because when I was watching him in this movie, I thought, my God, he looks so skinny and so scary. And I was like, this had to be around the time of Dallas Buyers Club. But I didn't think it was the same time. So they came out the same year and Matthew won. I thought Matthew was exceptional in that role, but that movie is one of the biggest downers I've ever watched in my entire life. And I've watched hundreds of movies. But I thought Leo, if he should win an Oscar for anything, it would have either, in my opinion, been What's Eating Gilbert Grape or this one.
I also looked at Best Supporting Actress because I was interested, you know, why Margot didn't get nominated.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, one of her first things that she's done. So that could have had partly to do with it. But Lupita Nyong'o won that year for 12 Years a Slave. And that was a career-defining performance.
It really was. We love Lupita.
Yeah. But that was a much, I think, much tougher role to portray than this particular role that Margot Robbie's playing in this movie.
Yes,
so.
But and not to objectify her, but Margot's body, it's unfair. It's unreal. I don't know. I forget every time. And then I watch this movie and I just think, how are any of us supposed to live our lives when this is out here?
So another like is that this movie is really chaotic. It's really stressful. Even if you know what's happening, there is so much going on screen, especially the movie just starts with like a bang. There's so much stuff. I think Leo does drugs. He's getting a sexual act performed on him. Something else is happening all in like the first 5 minutes of the movie. And you're like, wow, okay, we're really going here. So that's really crazy. But I think that helps the movie and it also hurts the movie in some ways. It helps because it's interesting throughout the entire time. But I think from a rewatchability perspective, whenever you rewatch this, you're like, oh, this is going to be an investment. This is going to take a lot to, get through this, basically, this 3 hours. It's not going to be an easy just sit on the couch and hang back and, you know, be on your phone. It's like it's going to be in your face the entire time.
Yeah, this movie is just wild from start to finish. And I can't, because this was so long ago, I can't remember vividly like sitting there with you and watching the first 10 minutes. But I think what this movie does so well is if you're, whether you like it or not, which I don't like any of the characters, I don't root for anybody in this film. But if the purpose of the movie is to make you feel like you've been doing lines of coke for 3 hours and be stressed out about everything, this movie does that exceptionally well. And the acting is just like a small part of that. But this movie, even watching it last night, I'm trying to think how many, I think I've probably watched it 5 times. This movie stresses me out every time as much as it did the first time, which I think is really impressive. And there's not a lot of movies I can say have that same initial impact as they did the first time, like consistently, I mean.
So there's like a couple scenes in this movie that I really enjoy. One of those is that I wanted to point out is like the penny stock scene when he's in that little dinky office.
Yes. And Spike Jones.
Yeah. Yep. Spike Jones is in there. So that is a really like impactful scene. Mm-hmm. Another scene, of course, is where he like goes home from the country club and crawls in down to the car and then like drives off. So my fun fact is that car from Wolf of Wall Street just went to auction. It's going to be auctioned off in December, that Lamborghini. So
how much?
Probably
let me start saving
million.
My pennies right now.
And then the other scene that I really like is I really like the Margot Robbie Leo scene where she is splashing water on his face.
Yes, that scene is so good.
Yeah, that's really good acting from the both of them. Just really great performances. So,
well, the scene I revisit between, I love that scene and I cringe every time, but I'm also sweating from being so charged. When she does the daddy scene with him and I'm trying to keep this family friendly here, but basically she's talking about short skirts and withholding her body from daddy for a while because she's mad at him. And part of me is like, wow, this is well played, Margot. As a woman, I just think well played. And also like, I hate that I get so hot when I watch it that I love it so much. But then I'm also disgusted at the same time by like how much they hate each other and also that he's filming her like with the little teddy cam camera thing. I hate that. I also hate that scene that you talked about. Their acting is spectacular in that scene where she's splashing water in his face, but I hate that he hits her and that she hits him. I hate it. I hate the abuse. That really – it takes me out of the movie. And then he's also in recovery at that point. You're so happy for him. Like, not happy for him. He's still a piece. But I'm proud of him for being sober. And then you just see him, like, pour out what looks like a gallon Ziploc of Coke and just go to town. And also I'm concerned at that point. I mean, I am not a Coke user. Surprise, surprise. Same. But I also think like it, not only is Coke like, there's a good chance Coke can kill you, but also the fact that he hasn't done it in a while and then just does a mound of Coke. And I just think, I don't know that you would live through this, but who am I? Anyway, without getting sidetracked too much, I just think that those scenes really stick out to me. And then I also like the scene, the penny stock scene, I think is great. And I really like his reaction and the way his character is portrayed when he is kind of like a virgin on Wall Street, when he meets with Matthew McConaughey and mm-hmm. has lunch with him.
Yeah.
I think Leo does such a good job of playing this like really naive, young, inexperienced guy who's a little cocky, but is not too big for his britches. And then just to see that change, I think he did a phenomenal job. Again, he's such a good actor. But there's a lot of scenes in this movie that I think the acting is superb.
Yeah, the wedding scene is another good one.
Yes.
Margot Robbie's wedding is a fun one as well. So.
I also like everything with the aunt. Is it Aunt yes. Helen?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I really like her. And then this kind of goes along with just like how well this is filmed. I think, because I normally don't talk about editing, I'm really impressed with the editing in this film. Both how they weave in and out of scenes, but also like there's a lot of cutaway clips to video footage or Wall Street or like animals fighting in the wild, stuff like that. And I think it's very, very well done in this movie.
So I had one scene I noticed on the rewatch where I didn't think the editing was great, but I'll talk about that in dislikes. But you're right. It's very much like The Big Short is another movie that comes to mind where it's like mixing all of these real life clips with the actors on screen. And this movie's kind of doing the same thing and jumping around from different places a bunch too. So production value of this film is fantastic. Of course, everybody looks great, but like the costumes, the outfits, the sets, that big office building looks really cool. Lots of things that they use throughout the movie just really look good and really fit like this whole aesthetic that they've put together for this film.
Yes, couldn't agree with you more. Excuse me. I think the production value is amazing. The outfits especially. Also, Margot's been in a couple things like I, Tonya and stuff where she's in 80s garb and she just looks really good in it. Things like just the props, the set design, the cars, the drugs that are being used. It's amazing. So the production value blows it out of the park for me. And then I was trying to look up The Big Short. I just saw, yes, confirmed. It is on Netflix.
Okay.
Because I started it the other night and then I was like, no, I need to watch Wolf of Wall Street. And it was just added. So it's not something that it doesn't say it's going to disappear anytime soon. But if you're interested in The Big Short or want to rewatch, it is currently on Netflix.
Nice. Also, if you're wondering what they snorted in this movie, it was vitamin D powder. That's what they used for cocaine. But Jonah Hill had to go to the hospital with bronchitis due to how much he snorted in the film. So that's a lot of vitamin D powder. So.
And you know what? I don't think we have to say this, but I would encourage anyone who's listening to this podcast, don't do drugs. I think it's a bad idea. I have evidence to back up that and data that I can support those sentences with, but if you are ever considering hard drugs or you're like, man, I really missed out in life, watch this movie and I think it'll convince you that drugs are a bad idea.
Yeah, I think that's really the big message of the movie, like overall is yeah. There's this crazy guy, he did wild stuff, but all of that wild stuff had consequences. It affected his marriage, it affected his friendships, it affected his kids, his career, all of that stuff. You know, Martin Scorsese, to his credit, does not just end the movie when he's at the highest of his highs. You know, he does follow through, and that's kind of the last hour is like the downfall of all of the behavior.
Well, and you know who this reminded me of, this whole movie, is Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos. It's like this guy got good, like needed to go to prison, and I'm glad he did, but he was just screwing people left and right and didn't really care. And knew what was right from wrong from the very beginning and continued to do it anyway. And she's the exact same way. And I feel like people like that are true narcissists. And also, I'm very happy when they get the punishment that fits the crime. I don't even think he got the punishment he should have gotten. I think it should have been much worse, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, he only got 3 years in prison. Yeah. So it's not that long when you think of all the stuff he did in this movie. So do you have any other likes before we move to dislikes?
I just think this is a good cautionary tale. I think we kind of alluded to that. And then I do remember this was the first thing I saw Margot in, because About Time I saw shortly after. And clearly whoever made the casting choice to put her in this, spectacular. I mean, she couldn't be more on the rise right now, but I'm really grateful that whoever cast her discovered her, because she's one of my favorite actresses and I just really like her, and she's beautiful. And yeah, that daddy scene, I'm going to be thinking about that for a while. In fact, I'd rather think about that than Timothée Chalamet and Kylie Jenner.
Okay. Yeah. Then okay. Think about that. Put that in your brain. So I also really like in this movie, I think Rob Reiner's really good in his role as Leo's dad. He has some funny scenes. And then Kyle Chandler is really good as the FBI agent. He plays that type of role very well, where it's like the gritty kind of dude. But he's pretty good in this movie, too. So
yes.
Okay, on to dislikes now for Wolf of Wall Street. One is it is really long, and it's really an investment. It's three hours. I would say this movie at 3 hours works better than a lot of other movies at three
for
hours.
For sure.
But it's still pretty long. There was one scene that I thought you could pretty much cut, and that was the scene between Jonah Hill and John Bernthal when he's dropping off the money. That was like 10 minutes. But rewatching it this time, I was like, that was so long. We could have just like had that be a lot quicker, and then he still could have got arrested, and we could have advanced the story. But the fact that was like so lengthy.
Are you talking about when he goes to meet him with the car?
Yes.
Or are you talking about when the wife is getting covered with money?
The one where he goes to meet him with the car in that parking lot.
I was thinking both popped into my mind, and I think both could have been shortened. I think that the scene with the wife and the money and smuggling stuff into Switzerland is more important, or not more important. I wouldn't say it's more important, but I think that that scene was like funny, but it could have easily been cut. But the car scene is more important, I think, because somebody gets sent to prison as a result.
Yeah. So. All the stuff with Jean Desjardins too.
Who,
that's not really a highlight of this movie. That stuff's kind of a little boring at times. So I feel like you could have cut that down.
Well, do you know what's hard for me is I hate when movies do this, and this movie does exactly this. I hate when a movie kind of is coming to a natural resolution and then there's 20 more minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like you think it's almost done. Now, I think the last 20 minutes are very important, and I think Scorsese knew what he was doing there, but I don't like the transition at the end there because I think they could have cut it or edited those together better, because you think the movie's about to end and then they're like, oh wait, there's this whole scene that I just talked about where he does the coke and he endangers his daughter's life and then gets sentenced. Like, it's a mess.
Yeah, even the Quaalude scene where him and Jonah Hill take him at his house and then he goes to the country club and then comes back and then Jonah Hill's choking and he has to, I mean, that is kind of a little lengthy at times too. Now, granted, it's the fourth time seeing it, so the intrigue of seeing it for the first time is gone, obviously, but on a rewatch, it seems like that might have been able to be cut down a little bit too, but that's great acting from all three of them. In that scene, especially when he's choking on whatever he ate there while he was doing his quaaludes. So, another dislike I had was there was one scene that I noticed was really poorly edited. That is with Leo and Kyle Chandler when they're on the yacht and Leo is talking to Kyle Chandler. That's like a back and forth shooting both their heads, basically. But there's like times when Leo is not talking, but his mouth is moving in that scene. And there's like some really awkward cuts where like Kyle Chandler is standing in one spot and then it's cut and he's in a totally different spot. So I just feel, I don't know if they didn't have that yacht for a long time or if they had compressed shooting schedule for that or what, but that was just the one scene that I noticed where the editing was kind of choppy. So
I didn't even notice that, so kudos to you for being that perceptive about it. But I do like that scene throws me too because of, well, actually I did think of one that I think is kind of cheesy, but that scene throws me because when he's yelling, I mean, I know that if they don't have a reason to bring you in, they can't just bring you in. But the FBI, like the way he screams and the language and the way in which he speaks to the FBI agent and screams at him, I'm just like, can people do that? Because I don't know. I don't know that I would mess with an FBI agent like that. But one scene I thought seemed very cheesy and cheap was when they think about to escape with the money, and then they find out that Aunt Emma has died. I think that backdrop is probably real because it looks like Positano or somewhere in Italy. Like there are places that look like that, but it looks fake to me. So I don't know if that was a background or a green screen or something, or if that was real, but it looked very cheap to me. And then even when they get on the boat, like when they're in the storm, there's like a huge storm and they think they're going to die. That seems very cheap to me. I don't know that I can put my finger on it, but it felt like those few scenes right there didn't fit with the rest of the film quality wise.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because there's not a lot of CGI in this movie, so we just haven't seen a lot in the movie up to that point. So it's just kind of jarring when you see this ship that's obviously not real, like crashing through these waves.
Yeah.
But you're right. That scene's a little, I would say, choppy in its writing too, because everything happens so fast, whereas some scenes are so drawn out. That one is like Margot gets on the boat, tells him she's died. They're like, we got to go here. They leave. And then we're like right in the middle of the ship basically collapsing. So another dislike is everybody in this film is an awful person, pretty much. None of them are really doing good things. Nobody really has a ton of redeeming qualities, especially our main character and our main supporting cast. So this is just a wild lifestyle that these people lived, and obviously is not really indicative of how like a real person lives their life. But there's really no way to like root for these people in this movie.
Yeah, that's hard for me. That's hard for me in books and films. If there's no one to root for, like an anti-hero, I get that that's a concept and stuff, but I just can't. I have a harder time when there's no one with any redeeming qualities in a film or a movie or a film or a book. So this movie is hard for me to watch. And then I also, like, I just hate how they treat each other. Like, there's abuse in this movie. Everybody is immoral. Nobody cares about anybody else's feelings. They don't care about the repercussions. They're all narcissists. They're disrespectful to each other and to everyone around them. It's just bad. And then I think the other thing, I mean, this might make me sound like a prude, but this movie is so inappropriate. There is so much that makes this a hard R that I think this is maybe one of the most limiting audiences of any movie we've covered, because there's just so many people that even if your parents or like guardians objected to language, this movie would be out. If they objected to, I don't want to see you have you see someone smoke crack, you couldn't watch this movie. If it was, there's so many factors in this movie that push the envelope, and perhaps some we didn't need. And I'm not as bothered by nudity, and I think in America we're crazy weird about it. But also, like, there's so much full frontal nudity in this that I'm like, it's shocking. It's shocking compared to what we're used to. So I think this movie is not really, both because of all the hateful characters and how chaotic it is, I think it's not easily rewatchable. Also because of the length of the film. But I also think there's so many things that are wildly inappropriate and graphic about it that a lot of people can't watch it.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that it did make like over $400 million worldwide at the box office, given its content. And I think you mentioned the nudity. I think that's the thing for me that stands out the most, not so much the language, not so much the drug use, but I think the nudity and the fact that it happens at times when you're not expecting it. It's not like a sex scene is happening and you're like, okay, they're going to take their clothes off now. It's like, bam, there's a naked woman. Like, we cut from one thing to the next and there's five naked girls or whatever. So,
well, and also men, like the fact that we see a man.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's the thing that gets it for me is that it's just so, it's so unexpected when it does happen that you're like, oh, your brain just wasn't ready for that at that particular moment.
Yeah.
So,
and it's also, I think the other thing that makes it different is it's prolonged nudity. It's not a brief cutaway where you think, did I just see what I thought I saw? You know what you see because you're staring at it for like 30 seconds.
Well, and as like with the drugs, you know, as a viewer that they are not actually doing cocaine.
True.
With the nudity, that is actually, you know, a person's body. So
drugs,
you know,
freak me out. I hate drugs in general, also because we have such a drug crisis in America. But also I hate when they show how to do all the drugs. Like, I think that that's aiding the problem that we have about drugs.
Yeah. Yep. I would agree. So, Okay. Well, I think that's all of our dislikes for Wolf of Wall
Street.
Yeah,
sure is.
So what are you going to score it?
Okay. This is a movie that I do like. I think there's a lot of redeeming qualities about it. It's extremely well done. Great production value, great acting performances. I don't hate the movie by any means. But I couldn't watch it all the time, and I do hate everybody in it and everything that they stand for. I'm going to go ahead and give this an 84.
Nice. I'm going to go just a little bit lower than you and just give it a nice round 80. So
I love it.
It's good. Again, it's not one that I could rewatch all the time. It's not my favorite movie. Not my favorite Leo movie, although I think it's probably his best performance. But I have a different favorite movie of his. But
Inception.
I think, yes, that would be it. So, but I think that it is stellar performances all around. It was very different. I mean, we looking at this movie, we still haven't had a movie made like this, like, recently, where that was this crazy and this wild, that was, you know, done by such a popular director and actor. So I think that's interesting too. But I think from a score standpoint, it's good, but it's not like my favorite movie of all time. I will rewatch it every 5 years or so, but that's about how often I can rewatch this one. So
yeah.
Cool. Well, you can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook, and you'll be able to find us there. And you can also follow us on Letterboxd as well. Just click our descriptions in the show notes, and you can find our Letterboxd profiles.
Jared, I'm really glad this was the first movie we saw together.
Yeah, this was a fun one. I mean, I think it was a lot to talk about. So like I said earlier, and I think it really was like a springboard for a lot of other movies that we saw. And this was a good time for movies, too. I remember 2013, 14, 15 were some good years for movies. And it was still in that time when there wasn't as much stuff on streaming. So you really had to go to the theaters to see the big stuff. Whereas now, a lot of times it comes out on streaming, or it'll come out on streaming 5 weeks later, so you're like, I'll just wait. But during this time period, there was still you have to go to the movies if you want to see that brand new movie, because it's only going to be there for the next 6 months.
Well, and I'm impressed that we saw this and remained friends, and it was the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
I would agree. So, and then we were crazy and saw Inside Llewyn Davis after this. What were we thinking? We should have gone like bowling or something.
I don't know. I don't know.
We're like, let's go see another depressing movie.
Yeah.
But we've seen happy ones, we've seen sad ones, we've seen a lot, so.
And we're still here to tell
we're still
tale.
Here, yep.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.